What if there was one simple pill that could help support your energy, vitality, and cardiovascular function? Well, introducing new and improved Green Tea CR Phytosome formula from Purity Products. It's the power of three of nature's top superfoods, a clinically tested green tea plus curcumin and resveratrol, all in one simple capsule. It's potent, clinically tested, and it works to promote your energy, vitality, cardio health, immunity, and antioxidant defense. Our friends at Purity Products have a free bottle for you today to put to the test. Just pay $4.95 for shipping. Even better, call now and get a second free bottle. Purity's B12 Energy Melts. That's your second free gift. Again, for your free bottles of Green TCR and B12 Energy Melts, call 1-800-218-6030. That's 1-800-218-6030. Again, 1-800-218-6030. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoppen. We're talking today to Jimmy Moore and Christine Moore, who together have written a new book, Real Food Keto. It's the latest in a series of books, starting with Keto Clarity back in 2014, which heralded a revolution in low-carb dieting. We won't call it dieting because it's not merely a trick to lose a few pounds and then go back on a feed bag. It's a lifestyle, and it's a lifestyle that can provide benefits. Jimmy, let's start from the basics here. Why undertake a ketogenic diet? I mean, is this for everyone, or is this a therapeutic diet for people with certain conditions? How do you make the cut in terms of whether this is the right thing for you?
Right. Like my wife, Christine, said earlier, not everybody needs to do keto because we have this beautiful thing called bioindividuality where some people have a metabolism that is a little more broken than others. I happen to be one of those people who deals with insulin resistance, and there's varying levels of insulin resistance. My previous book, The Keto Cure, we talked about upwards of 80% of the population has some level, either minor to major, of insulin resistance. And if your body's not responding properly to that hormone insulin, then you can't see fat loss. You can't see health gains take place. So I would say if you have body fat on your body, you're probably insulin resistant. You're probably a good candidate for going on a ketogenic diet. If you have blood sugar that is wonky because you're type 2 diabetic or pre-diabetic or just have funky blood sugars, you should probably go on a ketogenic diet. Really, anyone that is looking to lower inflammation, and this is the big part of keto, it's not the magicalness of lowering carbs or raising fat or moderating your protein. It's actually the anti-inflammatory effects of this way of eating that brings about all this healing in the body.
So and there's a big misconceptions about this, because a lot of people think that keto diet is Fred Flintstone throwing the brontosaurus steak on the Barbie, that it's like massive amounts of animal protein, steak for breakfast. I mean, you can have steak for breakfast, but you don't need to eat a 22-ounce porterhouse steak at every meal to achieve ketosis.
I don't think I could, actually. Okay. That's a lot of food.
Well, that's because you're eating some healthy fat that I think attenuates your appetite. I'm reading your blogs and you're saying, hey, you're just not that hungry anymore.
And I'm also not just eating healthy fats. I'm also eating quality food, which is an talked about. It's not talked about very much. The micronutrition that is in the better quality foods of grass-fed meats and organic vegetables and all the really good stuff, I think that provides a level of satiation that fat alone cannot.
Do you eschew fiber-rich foods? Because that's a big critique of the low-carb diets, and especially the ketogenic diet, is that there's not enough fiber and people need a lot of fiber. Where are the fresh fruits and vegetables in that?
So, with a ketogenic diet, you can have non-starchy veggies. You can have leafy green veggies.
We have three gardens in our backyard, front yard and backyard.
So, yeah, we get plenty of vegetables. And even for somebody that maybe can handle a little bit of fruit, we'd like to stay away from the oranges, the apples, the bananas, things like that. Mm-hmm. But Jimmy and I like to do strawberries, blueberries, blackberries, raspberries with some heavy cream and a couple of pieces of dark chocolate for dessert. And, you know, for those that can handle that, that's a great option. Mm-hmm. So
I'm glad you said the dark chocolate, because it would really be tough for me to eschew that completely. You know, my 92% dark chocolate, you know, even though 8% is maybe got some carbs in it. You know.
Oh, I do 87, Dr. Hoffman. So, yeah.
I guess so, I'm more hardcore.
That's the reason why we do the heavy cream with it, because the heavy cream kind of blunts the effect of the berries and the dark chocolate. So it's important to have that fat with it. So for me, a ketogenic diet is very rich in vegetables and can be for some people with fruit. So you're not depriving yourself at all.
Do you have to obsess with the keto sticks? And now, of course, there's a new technology since Dr. Atkins first introduced this. I remember all his patients used to have these sticks, and they say, you know, they don't turn purple sometimes, you know, and I've got to, like, really, really restrict my carbs for my keto sticks to turn purple. And now they have more precise measurement devices. They actually have meters that measure your blood ketones. Do you obsessively monitor that when you're on the diet?
Obsessively is the wrong word.
Okay.
track, I guess, is a good way to put it. And when I first started on, like, strictly trying to do keto, I was testing it in 2012, 2013 in preparation for my book, Keto Clarity, what mm-hmm. turned into Keto Clarity. And I was doing it every day, morning and night, sometimes every hour on the hour. But that was for a formalized experiment that I was sharing.
Like a science fair project, right?
Yeah. So for the average everyday person, I'd say do it for 30 days. Then you see the trend where you test once in the morning when you wake up, mm-hmm. once in the evening when you go to sleep, and you're becoming keto adapted. You kind of want to see where it is. But what happens over time, Dr. Hoffman, is you realize it becomes intuitive. I can almost wake up today and mm-hmm. say, oh, I got about a 1.2 blood mm-hmm. ketone. I
just can almost feel
it. Yeah. And so the sophistication of the technology is really good. And what's fascinating to me as someone whose ear is very close to the ground, there's a lot of companies trying to get in on the ketone testing business. So there's this new device that just did a crowdsourcing campaign, and they got mm-hmm. 10 times more money than they ever thought they would for a breath ketone device.
Oh, wow.
I've been using a breath ketone device called Ketonics for many years, and they've continued to do sophistication to the technology so that it shows you the readout on your phone now. So we live in a really grand age, and if you're trying to see if you're a fat burner or a sugar burner or not, mm-hmm. the tools are certainly there for the taking.
So you use the term keto adaptation and keto clarity. The clarity, I think, refers to the sense of kind of well-being and balance that you achieve when you become keto adapted. Am I not mistaken?
Oh, yeah. I often tell people, if I got no weight loss benefit from doing keto, mm-hmm. if I could keep this brain that I have now for the rest of my life.
Absence of brain fog, you know.
Yes, the absence of brain fog. But even more than that, I would say mental sharpness. I mean, mm-hmm, I'm writing mm-hmm. buku numbers of books. I'm very productive in mm-hmm. my work, mm-hmm. doing multiple podcasts a week. I am sharper probably than I was in my 20s, mm-hmm. and I'm in my late 40s now. And so I hope that 20 years from now, I still have just as lucid a brain and memory. And I can recall things when I've interviewed somebody on my podcast. So I think a lot of that is attributed to now my brain being fueled by fat.
Okay. So devil's advocacy position here. Okay. Maybe you've achieved benefits. You know, you've lost scads of weight. You feel okay. But some would say, well, you're in a fool's paradise, because as you consume all that fat and you're in the absence of carbohydrates, your arteries are becoming clogged. Your cholesterol is going sky high. What does the research say? What is your personal experience around that? Are your numbers good? Are patients experiencing freedom from cardiovascular risk?
So cholesterol, total cholesterol, is really not something that I'm too concerned with. The heart disease happens because of a diet high in carbohydrates and processed foods, sugar, that sort of thing. So what happens is you eat those things, the sugar, the processed foods, and this causes an insulin surge. These things irritate the arterial wall. Mm-hmm. Cholesterol is in your body to help deal with inflammation. So what happens when you have an abrasion on your artery? The cholesterol goes to that site and tries to heal that abrasion. So when somebody goes into the hospital and they have a heart attack and the doctors look at them, what they see is the cholesterol there, but what they fail to realize is the cholesterol is not the enemy. Mm-hmm. It's trying to help heal that person. And if a person continues to eat these sugars and processed foods, the damage is continually be done to the arteries, and the cholesterol is having to go to that artery. It heals it, and the artery scabs, and then that's mm-hmm. what causes the constriction of the arteries too. So it's not the fat in the diet that causes the heart disease. It's a diet high in the sugars and processed carbohydrates. What we like to look at is a person's HDL, their triglycerides, that ratio between the two. We like mm-hmm. to look at HSCRP.
Excuse me, and generally, my finding is that people on this type of diet, their cholesterol may not go down, but their triglycerides go way down, and often the ratio of their cholesterol to HDL improves. The HDL may go up.
Right. Right, exactly. So if you see somebody that has triglycerides under 100, preferably 70 or less, then you mm-hmm. know that they're carb-restricting. Mm-hmm. So That's what I like to see, and then the HSCRP and those things.
And the new cholesterol guidelines actually have now put a buffer zone between just giving a statin drug based on a high LDL or high total cholesterol. They now say, go get a CT heart scan first, mm-hmm. looking mm-hmm. for actual signs of disease. Now, I'm dubious, Dr. Hoffman, yep. that most medical doctors will do anything.
I'm just going to say, you know, that's wishful thinking. I think the vast majority of my colleagues reflexly treat high cholesterol by the numbers. I call it paint by numbers medicine, and without looking at the individual, because I plugged my numbers and they're not bad into some of these algorithms and says immediately, you know, go out and get on a statin, you know, and I've got a zero coronary artery calcium score, so they don't factor that into the equation.
Yeah, same here. And I've had some lipidologist, one famous one on Twitter, Dr. Tom Dayspring, just told me, get on a damn statin already. And that was like a decade ago. And I'm like, dude, I'm okay. I'm going to outlive you, I promise.
Indeed. So in terms of mistakes that people make on a ketogenic diet, you know, one is inadequate hydration. Another is perhaps not emphasizing healthy fiber from sources like flaxseed, you know, which I believe is permissible, right? It's not a high carb source, but also leafy green vegetables. You know, your garden is full of them. You know, minimize the starchy or sugary fruits and vegetables. What about protein? Do some people, you know, kind of miss the message about healthy fats? They eat a lot of protein, but not enough fat to make it work.
Yeah, see, this is where I think Dr. Atkins got it wrong, because his program was spot on the carbohydrate restriction. Get it down to 20 grams to start. So that was good. Yep. And then he said, eat unlimited fat and protein to satiety. Mm-hmm. What he did not realize, what it was a fat phobic society, was going to automatically go to the chicken breast for that unlimited fat and protein. Yep. And so getting people to embrace the fats is a big one, but moderating down on protein is such a big one. So that 22-ounce porterhouse you were mentioning earlier, mm-hmm. the reason I can't eat that is it's way too much protein, because the body can't store protein. So any excess that it can't use actually has to get converted into a usable source of energy. And it goes through the liver, converts into glucose through gluconeogenesis. And it's a problem for the body if you're trying to not be a sugar burner when you produce glucose from the protein that you're eating.
So a refinement that it sounds like you're exploring in your writings and in, you know, stuff you talk about on your radio program is combining the benefits of a ketogenic diet or low-carb dieting with another thing that's becoming very trendy, which is IF, intermittent fasting. Can you talk about how that fits into the picture?
Oh, yeah. Just yesterday, I fasted for 25 hours. And it happens very naturally when you go keto. This was the most fascinating thing. And Christine can tell you, when I first started testing nutritional ketosis in 2012, what was it? What was that story where I was sitting on the couch and...
Well, you just... Well, I asked you, when was the last time you ate? And you had to stop and think about it. For the first time in your life, Jimmy, you weren't obsessing about food.
It had been 24 hours, Dr. Hoffman, Whoa. Since my last meal, because I had just so forgotten about eating. And that's the beauty of bringing insulin levels down, nourishing your body well with foods that taste good, number one, but also nourish you very well with fats and moderate amounts of protein and minimal carbs and high quality foods. All of those things make intermittent fasting, IF, extraordinarily easy to do. And I think when you give your body a break from time to time, and it's very easy to implement an intermittent fast. You eat your last meal of the day at 6 o'clock the night before. You wake up the next morning and you're not really hungry. So don't eat out of habit at 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning. Push it all the way to noon. Mm-hmm. And then at noon, you can have that break fast, because that's all breakfast means, is breaking the fast. And so you can have your break fast at noon. And when you do that, you just fasted intermittently for 18 hours, mm-hmm. and that provides so many great benefits. Eat within that kind of 8 hour window. And a lot of us have now even tightened up the 8 hour window and maybe eaten within a 1 hour window and fast for 23 hours. So, I mean, it's going to depend on where you are in your journey.
Yeah, that 18-6 or 16-8 regimen is a little bit what I naturally revert to when I don't have to get to work early in the morning. Although when I go to work, I feel I owe it to my patients to have a little bit of breakfast, so I'm a little less out of it and grouchy. That certainly seems to work. And then a new study, I think just out this month or last month, suggests they compared a diet where every single day you eat 75% of the calories that you would normally eat versus a program where net during the week, mathematically, it's the same thing. 2 days a week, you only eat 25% of the calories. In other words, you have two semi-fast days. That in Britain, it's a best-selling book. It's the 5-2 diet.
Right.
That is another variation on the theme, which is sort of a timed, time-restricted eating, or the 5-2 program.
Yeah, Michael Mosley.
Michael Mosley, right, who's a British author who's put together that program. They found that they were absolutely equivalent in terms of weight loss, but also I think in terms of acceptability. I think it's a lot easier to implement a program where you're eating reasonably, you know, restricting dramatically 5 days, but 2 days, okay, you're gonna take it easy.
Can I be honest? I would much rather, having done a lot of fasting now, I would much rather not eat at all than to undereat and have my body react the way it does.
Okay.
And this is just anecdotal for me. Mm-hmm. I've just noticed that when I consume less than a certain amount of calories, let's just arbitrarily say it's 800 calories. Let's say I have a little something for a day. I'm far more hungry having that little something of food than if I just went ahead and just fasted that day and not ate at all.
It just starts the ball rolling metabolically, and you get a bit of an insulin response, or these counter-regulatory hormones kick in, and pretty soon you're looking for that next feedback, I guess.
Yep, and I do far better if I just push the fasting window to 24, 36, even upwards of 48 or 72 hours, where you start talking about autophagy, benefits coming in. Those are the things that are a lot more exciting to me than fat loss.
Right, and that's like getting away from this whole issue of fat. And actually, you've commented on this yourself, is that you've been on a little bit of a personal journey and a philosophical journey, and at a certain point, when we put the emphasis on fat and appearance, we sort of are creating a schizophrenic culture, a fat shaming culture. And we really have to get into, this is about optimizing our health. That's what I tell my patients. It's not a matter of, the perfect mirror image, because it'll never be perfect if your self-acceptance isn't there. That you really, should be emphasizing the endpoint, which is a healthier, more vibrant, more productive you.
I totally agree. I get so aggravated with seeing these posts on Facebook or other social media that
look how shredded I am, you know?
Yeah, that, I mean, we've put too much focus on weight, and you are so right. It does create eating disorders for some people, and we get too obsessed about the weight and we forget about what's happening on the inside. I can tell you, for me, growing up, I never had a weight problem. I was actually, well, I was underweight. I was born 3 months early at 2.5 pounds. Mm-hmm. And so from then on, you know, I struggled with being underweight. But because of my crappy diet, I was dealing with a whole lot of health issues that were manifesting on the inside that couldn't mm-hmm. be seen on the outside. So someone would look at me and they, oh, she's really healthy because she's thin. No, I was far from
healthy. That's our societal goal.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep. So, you know, clearly that's an issue. Where's, you know, what are the latest trends? Where's Live and La Vida Low Carb going in 2019? I mean, I'm sure you've got some plans lined up, some great guests lined up. What are some of the trends you're going to be exploring?
Yeah, I'm just going to continue to do my work. I mentioned earlier, I do 5 podcasts a week. So Christine and I do a show together called the Nutritional Pearls Podcast, where we just kind of explore things that we talked about in our book, Real Food Keto, those same kinds of things, not explicitly a ketogenic show, but one that kind of looks at the totality of health and all the kind of nutritional therapy aspects. Then, of course, the Live and La Vida Low Carb show has been out there forever and ever. Amen. 1,500 plus episodes and counting. I'm pretty proud of that show. Keto Talk on Thursdays, we still answer questions. And then Friday, I do a biohacking show with this gentleman, Dr. John Lemansky, where we add in some biohacking techniques, things like infrared sauna, HIIT therapy, light therapy. That
high intensity interval training.
Yeah. Yes, that's another one. So see me flipping my tire on there.
that reminds me, where does exercise fit into this? Because, you know, as a triathlete myself, you know, I've explored various diet regimens, you know, starting with the carbo loading, you know, traditionally before an event, I would have like a big pasta dinner. And then the trend has sort of switched. And now we see keto-adapted athletes. Is it feasible to be, a runner, a cyclist, a triathlete, a swimmer, while implementing this type of diet? Or does one have to make adjustments to get extra fuel?
So Dr. Steve Finney is kind of the creme de la creme researcher in this realm, him and Dr. Jeff Bullock. And they say that keto is the anti-bonking diet. So if you're an endurance athlete and you want to not bonk, which every endurance athlete knows exactly what that feels like, and it sucks.
Rubbery legs about, you know, 2 hours into the event and all of a sudden, you know, it's like power failure. Yeah.
Yes. And so I think it's extraordinary what's happening with endurance training. We have people like Professor Tim Noakes over in South Africa, who is a running god, wrote the book literally on running, and he's totally changed his mind. He used to be a carbo loading guy, and now he's totally in on the ketogenic message. So yeah, I think this is an optimal way. Now, what I have noticed talking to several of these kinds of athletes on my podcast is some of them will use strategic carbs on race day to kind of, you know, top off the glycogen stores, but then they burn through those pretty darn quick because you can only store about 2,000 calories worth of energy, and then it's gone. What's left? You've got a diesel tank full of stored body fat, even in the leanest person, upwards of nearly 100,000 calories worth of energy. So if you want to be a good endurance athlete and be successful at it, you get keto adapted.
You want to become a lean, mean, fat-burning machine.
That's right. That's right.
Okay. Well, it sounds like the way to use carbs judiciously, especially if you're doing really long events. I mean, maybe, you know, if you're walking the dog around the block for a couple of laps, going to the mailbox, you don't need to, you know, carbo load, but
I do that fasted.
as do we all. But, you know, when you get to a certain level of, you know, endurance, athleticism, maybe the carbs serve the purpose, same purpose that caffeine does in those athletes. You know, if you're drinking coffee all the time, you won't really notice it if you have a little caffeine before an event. But if you don't, this is something that I do on race day, is I'll take a little bit of caffeine because I don't drink caffeine. And man, you feel it. And I guess the carbs maybe can help you a little bit in terms of a long event. You know, not something, you know, like a 5K race. You don't need it.
Yeah, think of it as jet fuel to kind of start the race, and then you got diesel the rest of the race.
There you go. All right. Well, okay, all this information and more can be found in the series of books by Jimmy Moore, and now joined by Christine Moore in the latest iteration, which is Real Food Keto. And something about a keto cruise. You do a keto cruise as well? Is this something that you want to tell our public about?
Yeah, we actually do two of them now. We do our traditional low-carb cruise. We're coming up on our, what is it, Christine, 13th in 2019. So that's May the 31st through June the 8th. And then we do a Keto 101 cruise because keto was kind of all the rage. And we noticed a lot of people coming on the low-carb cruise coming up to us and saying, what's a keto? And so we thought, well, we should do a cruise that kind of explains some of the basics of a ketogenic diet. That's done in the fall. Sometime in late September. So all of that info is at lowcarbcruiseinfo.com.
Okay. What's your website again?
Mine is livinglavidalowcarb.com. Christine has a nutritional therapy practitioner site, rebootingyournutrition.com. And of course, Real Food Keto has its own website, realfoodketo.com.
Maybe you can do the cruise to Antarctica in the winter time, and then do a sort of that brown fat enhancing keto
cold thermogenesis.
Cold thermogenesis keto cruise where everybody's sitting on deck in their skivvies at 0 degrees, and they can really burn the fat. That would be good.
My co-host of Keto Hacking would love that.
Okay, what a concept. Okay, well, I'll take a percentage on that idea. Thanks very much. Thanks very much for joining. And thanks for really being a pioneer and a stalwart in this field, because I think you've really advanced public awareness and knowledge about something. You know, when you started, this was an aberration. This is like some form of extremism. And now it's gone mainstream. So kudos to you. Congratulations. You've certainly advanced the cause of healthy nutrition.
Thank you. It is amazing how far it's come since where I started.
Indeed. And thanks to you, Christine, for joining us. Congratulations as well.
Oh, thank you.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Tending to your cardiovascular health requires much more than simply lowering your cholesterol. Maintaining heart health requires a combination of diet and lifestyle choices, along with a smart regimen of supplementation. That's why I've created the Intelligent Medicine Heart Health Protocol, my personal supplement recommendations to reduce your heart risk. Just go to DearHoffmanStore.com for details. And for a limited time, you'll get free shipping on all of your store orders. For more details, just go to DearHoffmanStore.com. That's DearHoffmanStore.com.